Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Fourth and final hour. Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Thursday afternoon. Every Thursday at 1 o'clock, we talk to Elliot Freeman from Sportsnet. He's brought to you by Carrie's Ire, Remax Elite. Elliot, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing this afternoon?
We're doing fantastic. As long as the voice will stay with me, I'll be okay. If not, Willie's going to ask a lot more questions. So here goes.
You're a gamer.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
Speaking of gamers, last night in Edmonton, that Edmonton-Calgary game got a little crazy, especially early on.
It was great to watch, though. Like, you know, like, I don't know how many people of you down there are familiar with the Battle of Alberta, but when those two teams played in the 80s, those games, they were full of hate. Like, they were hate-filled hockey. Guys got legit hurt. There were four fights a night, and they were two of the best teams in the league, so the games really mattered. And it's been a long time since the two teams have been good enough at the same time that these games really mattered. And now it looks like about time we're back there. There was hate. They're both good. They're competing for first place in the Pacific Division. And that was nasty, intense hockey. And I can't have enough of that. And to be honest, I wish there was more of it.
You know, we had David Poile on for his weekly with us on Tuesday, and
yeah,
the Predators are going to close out their month tonight in Newark against New Jersey, and then it's going to be a lot of hockey in February and March. They're two most loaded months of the season, and as you know, Elliot, the trading deadline is late in the month of February, and we just flat out asked David, you know, how much is game by game, everything, you know, you see, especially early on, like so let's say the next couple weeks, going to change what you do. And so it is going to be interesting to see what David Poile does at the deadline. What's going to be his approach? Are they going to be buyers, sellers? What is the approach? How would you answer that today?
Well, I had a chance to speak to David yesterday, and I'm going to send him a note that Nashville is 1-0 this season when he talks to me on game day. So, like, he should continue doing that.
Yeah, good job.
He might call you today. He might call you today.
As my wife says, talking to me is like a fate worse than death, so I'm not sure that he's actually going to do that. But we'll see. But, you know, like to me, the last two games is everything about Nashville's season. So Toronto goes in there and they own that game for the most part. You guys had some moments, particularly in the third period when it was almost too late. But for most of the night, Toronto owned that game. And then you go into Washington, a tough place to play. Like, I think the two best teams in the league this year are St. Louis and Washington. Okay? And you guys had every excuse to lose that game. There were bad giveaways. You scored on your own net. You had every excuse to get blown out of the building, even with that early lead, and you found a way. Like, I understand why him and you and the fans are so frustrated with Nashville because at times this year, because you look at those two games and you're like, how can this be the same team? And I think that's the problem he's got right now, is that you don't know, you don't believe you're as bad as you were on Monday, but over the year you haven't shown the same resilience you showed last night. And I think that's the problem. I don't think he knows yet what his exact path is. The one thing he told me yesterday, and I do believe this, is he's open to just about anything. That doesn't mean he's going to do anything, but if you have an idea, he's going to listen to it. Because I think he's sitting there, he's looking at some of your guys, and he's saying they're all having their worst years at the same time. And I think when you're in that position, you're sitting there as a manager and you're going, I don't believe that this is the real Matt Duchene. I don't believe that this is the real Ryan Johansson. I don't believe that this is the real Pekka Rinne. I don't believe this is the real Philip Forsberg. Turris, it's been a couple years in a row now, so that's a little bit different. But I think he's going to listen on everything. But I think a lot of his decision-making will come to the fact is, how much of this does he believe this is a blip for some of your star players? Or how much does he believe there's reason to think, uh-oh, like, I've got something to really worry about here?
So I'm asking this question because I think it kind of goes along the same lines of what we just talked about and what you just threw out there. Do you believe this is going to be an active trading deadline? Do you believe this is going to be there's a lot of attractive pieces? Do you think there's going to be a lot of movement? I guess what I'm trying to figure out is if maybe he does sell off some players, is it because the market was bearing some high gifts, I guess, so to speak? How do you think this is going to play out at the deadline?
I will tell you, every year, my coworker Brian Burke, who used to be the GM in Anaheim and Toronto and Calgary, among others, every year he tells me the trade deadline is going to be a dud, and every year something big happens. This is the one that he has the best chance of it actually being a dud. When it comes to the rentals, there's not much. Like the best rental available, Taylor Hall, he's been traded. The next best rental available is Chris Kreider, and that one could go either way. I think the Rangers are going to try to sign him, but I could also see them blown away with an offer where they say, we have to take this. Other than that, I got to tell you guys, the rentals don't really excite anyone. And if I'm you guys in Nashville, I'm not paying a big price for a rental this year because I don't think I'm necessarily good enough to win. Like, you go out and you get a rental. Like, St. Louis, they're going to look at a rental because they think they can win. You're not otherwise looking at a rental unless, A, you're desperate, or B, you think you can win. Well, I don't right now think you guys can win. And are you desperate? I mean, you guys tell me, is Nashville desperate?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you're not necessarily doing that. So
what you said is true.
I don't think the rental market really excites anyone.
Yeah, what you said is true. Now, you've thrown out Granlund and Smith on these airwaves with us. Those would be two players that are going to be free agents at the end of the season. How would you describe them in your rental department? Are they up on a list or right in the middle? How do teams view them?
Well, Granlund's played really well lately, right? So
yep.
I think he's probably improved a little bit. Earlier in the year, and I don't know if it was what you guys were asking or what I think everybody was more down on Nashville before the year. I didn't get the sense there was a lot. But it might have been what you guys were asking as much as anything else. Granlund's played better. Like, I know there's some teams out there who like Granlund. I think there's a couple of teams who like Smith. I haven't heard his name as much, but I have to say I haven't really been looking for it. I just know whatever was being talked about earlier in the year, I never heard anything that was close. If there was something that was close, I'm not aware of it. I think the other thing I would just say about the whole trade situation is that I think what's going to be interesting is if guys get with term become available, guys who have a few more years on their contracts and are not eligible to become free agents, that's going to be the interesting one. That tends to happen more in the off season, but that's going to be the interesting one, and that's where I think you guys could have some interest in some people.
Talking to Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet, and of course he's got the latest edition of 31 Thoughts up and running. You can watch him on Hockey Night in Canada if you have the certain packages you need down here below the border. Elliot, I want to ask you, often in your 31 Thoughts, you talk about player usage. You know, how often do coaches decide to play the best players? And it dawns on me, and if you watched the two Nashville games, you just talked about the contrast in the performance in both games. But also what they did, they changed from a balance of four lines with the forwards, trying to roll four and have all four be a threat with Kyle Turris centering the fourth line, to having Matt Duchene move to the wing and sort of loading up in more a traditional sense the top two lines. I hear a lot of analytics people say that's how you should run it. You should play your best players more minutes than they do when they roll the four lines. But what are your thoughts philosophically on that?
I don't believe you should play it all equally. You know, the team that you played on Monday night at home, Toronto, they've gone from one philosophy to the other. When Mike Babcock was coaching, he was, like, some guys got more time than others, but he was generally a four-line guy. The new coach, Sheldon Keefe, he rides the horses. Like, he's had nights where guys have played 24, 25, and I think there's been a couple of 26, 27-minute games. Now, I will say this. I think it's easier to do it in the East than the West, where the travel is better. One of the things that helps Toronto and hurts you guys, Toronto's got short trips everywhere, right? They don't have a lot of ridiculous trips.
Right.
You guys have a lot of tougher trips. That makes it different. You have to have depth. If you don't have a good, like when you guys went to the final, you guys had a lot of good players. But I'm a big believer in that I need everybody, but some guys are more equal than others. And that I'm going to ride my horses. Like if there's a TV timeout and my best guys have just been on the ice and they had a great shift, I might throw them right back out after the commercial. I'm a big believer in that. I'm a big believer in the offensive zone. If I have two great players that maybe don't play together a lot, but I need a goal, I'm down a goal in the third period, I'm putting them together maybe in the offensive zone. I'm a big believer in I'm going to need you all, but you're not all going to play the same. I love flexibility. I love creative guys. So, you know, hey, and also, like, people used to coach against Scotty Bowman, the guy who won more Stanley Cups as a coach than anyone else. They said that you always had to be ready for the first 10 minutes of a game against him. And the reason was is his players knew he would decide who's going tonight in the first 10 minutes. And if you weren't going, you weren't playing. And I always liked that philosophy. If you have a guy who's having a good night, hey, I don't care if he's a fourth liner, this tonight's his night, he's going. And I like that. I do believe in I need all of you, but there's going to be nights where I need more of you than I need of you.
Elliot, one of the things that any general manager whose team is on the bubble will have to decide is what is it going to take to get into the playoffs? If you subscribe to the philosophy of if you get in, you have a chance. So in the West, especially with the Pacific, and I'm sure this got talked about a lot as Calgary and Edmonton were taking the ice here, is the balance of the Pacific. You got the first five teams all within, 5 points. What does that mean for the last wild card spot or two? Is it 93? Is it 95? I know it can change, but that is something you have to sort of project, isn't it?
Yes. I was told when I went into sports reporting there would be no math.
But we have websites. We have people do the math for us these days, Elliot.
You guys are smart. I mean, the thing is, like, the one thing you guys have is the games in hand, right? But you got to win them.
Right.
I think what you're looking at is, right now, if you guys win all your games in hand, you're there. But you have no room for error. You have no room for error. This is a weird league in the sense that you can get points for losing. You know, no one else is like that. No one else gives you points for losing of the big four. So it's not only that you have to have the other teams lose, you have to have them lose in regulation. And the other thing that people always forget is it's who's between you. So not only do you guys have to win your games in hand, but you've also got teams between you and that position. So, I mean, I don't know what the exact number is, 93 or 94, I'll be honest. But what I can
and it
tell
can change,
you
right?
You
what have, it is today may not be what it is in April,
right.
Depending on what teams get hot.
Zero margin for error. You have zero margin for error. You cannot afford a losing streak. It's not an option. Or else you're going to be out.
Well, who do you pick in the Pacific? Who do you think of that five-team cluster is the best team?
It should be Vegas, but it isn't. I think it's Vancouver. Wow. I would never have said this at the beginning of the year, but I think it might be like, I thought it was going to be Vegas, and they're not right. Then I thought it was Arizona, and with the goalie going down, Kemper, it's been trouble. Like, Vancouver got beaten up last night. Three guys got hurt. One of them did come back. I think they're the deepest team. Of course, as you guys know, you can be a great team. If your goalie can't stop the puck, you're in big trouble. Right now, their goalies, both of them, they can stop the puck. But Vancouver might be the deepest team.
Elliot, I've got some breaking news for you that you can put maybe in 31 thoughts, or you can save it for Hockey Night in Canada, whatever you want to do with this.
Or would this be the 32nd or 33rd thought? We'll find out if it can make the cut.
We'll see where this is. This is some really good stuff here. Monday night when Toronto was here, the commissioner, Gary Bettman, was also in the house just making his annual visit to Nashville. And I'm doing the pregame show in Jack Daniel's Barrel House when I had a voice.
Yeah.
And Gary Bettman stopped by, and the place was packed. And so I'm doing a live pregame show. The commissioner sits down with me. We have a really good interview. And when it was over, all the Predators fans that were in there were doing a lot of clapping and cheering. And there were also a lot of Maple Leafs fans in there that were booing the commissioner. My breaking news is Canadians still don't like Gary Bettman. So I don't know if that's something you want to throw in there or not, but they still don't like Gary.
It's a conditioned response, isn't it? You see the commissioner, you boo.
Yeah, it is a conditioned response, but I got to tell you guys, I think that's ridiculous. Like,
it is, isn't it?
The Ottawa situation has not been easy here. And I'll tell you, I heard rumors a couple years ago that team might move. He made it very clear they're not going anywhere, okay? And it's twice he's really defended them. He fought very hard to save Calgary and Edmonton when they were in trouble. He brought the NHL back to Winnipeg. I mean, look, the thing about Bettman is, like, sometimes he's so sarcastic in the way he answers questions that it rubs people the wrong way. He absolutely, the way he answers questions drives people crazy. And he almost never admits there's anything wrong with the game, and that drives people crazy. But in terms of how he's treated Canadian hockey fans, he's been really good to them. Yeah. And I get that. I just think now you're right. I think it's just a natural condition. It's like Pavlov's dog. You see him, you boo.
Well, he's done a lot for this market and this fan base.
Here's
and
my question.
This organization.
Did you give him any Jack Daniels?
No, he didn't ask for any. I would have, but he didn't ask for any. But no.
Next time, just offer it and tell me what he does.
Okay. I'll do that. I'll definitely do that. So I just look. We've talked about it a lot on this show. Like, he's done a lot. You know, there's some rough times here. Yeah, we've seen all the good, but people that haven't been here very long didn't get to see how close this thing was to. You know, we never got to see it. It could have gone away, but he fought to keep it here. He was a big part of this franchise staying here. So we always tell people, look, just because everybody else boos him, he's done a lot for Nashville. So we shouldn't boo. That's just us.
Hey, you wouldn't have a team without him.
I know. No doubt about it. And I don't know what Jim Boselli would have done, because does he have any money left?
Where is he?
Where's Jim Boselli?
I see him at the Olympics a lot.
Okay. So he's still got some BlackBerry money.
Yeah. Put it this way. One thing I've learned over the years is that maybe you lose your business money, but you generally don't lose your personal money.
Yeah. They're pretty smart about that. Good stuff. Elliot, thank you as always. I'm sorry that you had to endure my voice or lack of. I'll try to be better next week.
No. There's no problem with that. Like, to me, you're a gamer. It would have been very easy to call into work today and say, I've got an itch in my throat. I'm going to sit at home. You're there, man. Like, that is NHL tough. That's impressive.
Maybe I'll have some Jack Daniels after the show.
I would. I would, yes.
Thank you, Elliot. Appreciate it.
Take care, guys. Be
right.
Well.
That is Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. Every week he's brought to you by Carrie Zeyer Remax Elite. We will come back with more of Darren Donick and Chase next. Elijah just gave us some cool news during the break. So pick six is tomorrow at 1. And last week's winner, the listener, was David, the young man who called in. I don't know how old he was.
Oh, the youngster that called.
Sound like he was probably, I don't know, 12?
11, 12, I mean 13 at the most. He sounded pretty young.
He won. And he won. He needed the tiebreaker. The game total of Tennessee-Kansas. He won, so that's awesome. Very cool. He's probably borrowing his dad's phone to do that.
That's my hypothesis.
He definitely
didn't
sound
a phone.
Like he was driving. He wasn't old enough to drive.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah, it'd be a little irresponsible.
Well, if he's not of age, yes.
Right, exactly.
No, so that was good stuff there from Elliot Friedman, and he said that he does not believe this is going to be a great market for the deadline. It just definitely were not a lot of attractive names that he threw out there.
And, you know, the next few weeks, it can change, right? If certain teams go a certain way in the standings, then more teams will start rising up to the forefront. But as he pointed out, a lot of the guys that were sort of on this potential list last summer are not on the list anymore because they've been either already traded, like Taylor Hall. Or signed to the next contract, like a lot of all those RFAs were that we had our little wagers on that I won, by the way.
You did?
Yeah. But that is a factor. Like, I can see this for the Predators, okay? They may do nothing. The Blues didn't do anything last year. They did nothing. They were back in it by the time the trade deadline came around. I don't know that they made a single trade that I can remember.
I don't really.
Certainly wasn't a splashy
nothing
one.
Nothing impactful.
Might have been an extra guy here. The only thing I could see David Poile really, the only hole on paper is depth on defense, right? If you could find the right experienced defenseman that's an upgrade over what you have, then I think that's worth looking at. Otherwise, it's a hockey trade, right? It's more of a this asset for that asset. It's more of a, it's not a, I'll trade you my first round pick for this addition. Because right now, they have a lot of depth.
Well, how do you feel about Tenorti, who scored last night?
That is a guy that has a skill set that is unique and needed on this team. He had 8 hits last night.
Yes, he did.
The goal is one thing, right? That's great. You know, Yannick Weber scored. Those guys aren't out there to score goals. And it also tells you that you got to
that was his first career goal.
Right, and he's only played 10 games. But he's not a goal scorer, right? He's a guy that you want to be a physical presence, right? A, he can fight, right? He can do that.
He's a big guy.
Well, it's one thing to be a big guy. There are some big guys that didn't fight a whole lot. But this guy's a big guy who can fight, and he can be physical. Now, he's got to be good enough in the other areas. His position on defense, can you hit the outlet pass, right? Can you not turn the puck over? And he's still got a ways to go in that, right? But this is part of what you potentially can find out in the absence of Ryan Ellis, is some of these guys have to play, right? They're rotating these guys in. I think it's smart to try to find out what you have in Tenorti. If for nothing else, he can bring an ingredient to the game that the team as a whole doesn't have a whole lot of. But I do think more of a veteran guy, if you're looking at a playoff run and saying, okay, let's say you get a wild card and you are playing the St. Louis Blues in the first round, can you beat the Blues? I think the Predators on paper could beat anybody. But I might like to have another veteran defenseman to go on that ride.
Yeah, but what if you get I guess the reason I'm bringing it up is if you get Ellis back at some point and you continue to like what you see in Tenorti, are you really going to bring in another defenseman?
Tenorti, I don't think, can play top 4 minutes. I think Tenorti is a guy that, in a perfect world, would be on a third
pair. So you're
pair.
Talking about somebody with Ekholm.
Well, that's what we've been talking about for a long time, because who's playing that role right now? It's Dante Fabbro, who is still inexperienced, even though he is on a great path, I think, long term. But it's just a lot to ask him. If you were to, A, there's a section of the season here, critical games, you got to get to the playoffs, right? So he's playing critical minutes. Is he right for that role? Yeah, I think long term he is. But right now, how are you better off? And then in the playoffs, when you need depth and you need experience. And I'm not saying they can find this guy, right? They may not. And they might decide that, hey, we just got to roll with what we've got here.
I just don't see – do you see a scenario where he's a buyer? I'm just not sure David Poile is going to be a buyer.
Not a buyer per se, I don't think. But I think if it's a buyer, it's a buyer for a defenseman, not for a forward. And the possibility that I think is more probable is a hockey trade, right? You take – maybe it's a guy on an expiring contract and you trade for a guy that has an extra year. Right, a guy that you think the number, we're just not going to be able to re-sign this guy. But you could also just say, you know what? Like the Columbus last year. Now, Columbus was a buyer, right? But Columbus also decided there's some pieces we could move and we might lose, but we're going to ride them. We're going to lose them, perhaps, like Matthew Shane, like Panarin, but we want to keep those guys and give it a shot. That's one strategy. So when you heard Elliot Friedman say in his conversation with David Poile, I'm looking at all options. One option is to do nothing, like the Blues did last year.
What do you think about a guy like Adam Henrique in Anaheim? He had 2 goals last night.
Doesn't serve a purpose for the Predators. Where would he play? He's a center. They have a gazillion centers.
Okay. Well, they do.
It's a defenseman.
Okay.
Now, Hampus Lindholm on that team?
He also, I think, that he may have scored too.
Now, that's a guy that would fit the profile. I don't know what his contract is, but that's a team that I'm sure would be looking at moving pieces.
I'm just trying to think of teams like the Devils, the Ducks, I guess Los Angeles. I mean, those are the teams that are going to be probably sellers.
Adam Vingan has pointed
out
that you think about the connection with New Jersey, that John Hines has the familiarity. There's a couple of defensemen. One of them used to play for the Ducks, and Sammy Vatanen. That could be that guy fits the profile, has experience in the playoffs, has played a lot of games, is in the prime of his career. Andy Green would be another one.
Yep.
That you'll see tonight. Now what does it cost to get those guys? Do you have to spend your first round pick, your second round pick? I don't think they want to do that. I don't think they want to spend a first round pick. But remember, they have 2 seconds and they have 2/3. Would you flip one of those for a defenseman that could help you down the stretch? I think that's worth looking at.
Interesting. I don't know. I do think it's going to be what we've already talked about. It's going to be how they play, you know.
Sure.
Every game, every week, because there's going to be a lot of games. There's going to be a lot of body of work for David to make a decision in the next couple of weeks of really what the direction is.
Well, Elliot had an interesting term that I think says it well, right? In a way that we've been saying different things, but he said, will the real Matt Duchene please stand up? Will the real Ryan Johansson please stand up? Will the real Pekka-Rinne, Juuse Saros please stand up? That is really going to tell the story.
Yep.
More so than the trades that they make. Those guys are going to be on the team. How are they going to play? Tell me how they do between now and April 6th or whatever the last game of the season is, and I'll tell you what I think their chances of going are. Right? It's all about those guys.
Titans head coach Mike Vrabel sat down with the set of NFL Live down in Miami. We're actually going to hear that on the other side. But, Willie, you've got a word about the good folks at Lee Company.
All right. The good folks at Lee Company, as we say. 615-567-1000 is the phone number to always keep top of mind. And with that in mind, looking ahead, if you've got a home improvement project that you're looking to execute at some point, maybe it's a bathroom you want to renovate, maybe it's a bedroom, maybe it's a kitchen, Lee Company has that department. They're ready to serve you. 615-567-1000. Or go online at leecompany.com and look into all of these different things, because they can come out, get the job done for you. And all the other services that I tell you about as well. General maintenance at home or at work. And, of course, the home maintenance plan, the annual service that keeps you on top of things like your heating unit, cooling unit, plumbing, and electric. It all happens at Lee Company. Go to leecompany.com, check them out, or give them a call at 615-567-1000. Lee Company, proud sponsor of the Nashville Predators. Darren Donick and Chase coming down the home stretch. Jared and the GM coming up at 2 o'clock. Meanwhile, down in Miami, Coach Mike Vrabel, Tennessee Titans, joined NFL Live. Let's hear what he had to say as he went through the Super Bowl town.
As we say hello, Teddy Bruschi joins me to my friend Mike Vrabel. Yeah. And I got to tell you, we were talking, wasn't that long ago, I was covering the Patriots. We were in the locker room. You weren't a coach.
This is like a class reunion.
It is a class
reunion.
This is
the back row. This is
the
back row.
But it's like the 20-year class reunion, I'm afraid.
You're taking the place. You're taking the place of Izzo and Colvin and me.
I love Larry Izzo, too. I'll take his place. But, Braves, congratulations.
Thank you.
Teddy, you remember a thing or two about this guy?
This was the guy we asked all the questions in the back of the room. Yeah, and he's the one that gave us the answers. So I guess we're sort of in, we've come full circle now, because I will continue to ask the questions and get the answers.
Well, and when you're up here, you have all the answers, though. You have the questions and the answers. I don't have as many answers.
Well, I don't know about that. I do know this, though, Mike. You had expressed an interest in coaching for a long time, even during your playing career, and you kept this opportunity. And I know it didn't end the way you wanted to end this Sunday. Having said that, have you had a minute to reflect on really what was a tremendous year?
I'm proud of our players. Proud of our players and our staff. Our guys embraced the way that we needed to play. You know, would carry over a lot of those messages that I learned in Pittsburgh, that I learned in New England, about how to win games, that every game is different. You may have to play the Patriots differently than you play, you know, the Ravens or the Chiefs. And so our guys appreciated that, and I think they embraced it.
Did you think Ryan Tannehill would be as effective as he turned out to be?
I think that he was as prepared as I thought he would be. I think guys started to play better. I think as we blocked better and we ran better, and our receivers and AJ and Corey got better, and Jonnu Smith improved, that Ryan played better as well.
What did you see from him that you finally made that decision, and though Marcus is here, Marcus is struggling, we got a guy in Tannehill, we got to make that change?
He came in right away and he learned the system. He was very conscious, and I think you would appreciate this, he was very conscious of his role. He knew that his role was a backup, and it was to push Marcus, and it wasn't to dominate the room or talk to guys or be a leader, but he was ready to go, and when he got his opportunity, he made the most of it.
I mean, he was your offense, run, play action, pass, an athletic quarterback that can run. You also, I mean, you saw what Lamar did. Is this where the NFL is going? And so is it easier to find this type of guy than find a Patrick Mahomes or to find a Brady, those type of guys?
We can only pick players that are available to us, and that's what's in college football, and that's what's in high school football. And so as these, you know, in high school, the best player, they just put the ball in his hand. You're the quarterback, and you make something happen. And then if you can throw it a little bit, then you end up becoming a college quarterback. And so there's an element. You know how hard it is to defend. You make everybody defend the quarterback with all 11 players, as opposed to thinking he's just going to turn around and hand it off.
And your offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith, the job that he did. I mean, can you talk about that?
Can't say enough about Arthur and his staff. Our ability to score touchdowns in the red zone was huge. We struggled kicking field goals. That's not a secret. But we were able to go down there and score touchdowns. But Arthur did a fantastic job. He serves the players. He was well prepared, and I was proud of the way he operated this year.
Mike, you know, they say timing's everything. One, that's right. Two, in this instance, is a pretty good situation for the quarterback that we're talking about. Ryan Tannehill can become a free agent. You have the franchise tag at your disposal. How does that process play out?
You know, John and I, John and Robinson and I, we talk every day. We talk in the morning. We talk before we leave. And our job is to try to make the most competitive 90-man roster right now. It's not about making the right 53. We have to make a competitive 90, and that goes with our good players. And Ryan was one of those good players, and you know we have to do everything that we possibly can to get those good players back on our team.
So, I mean, is that your number one priority with Tannehill? I mean, there is a long list.
Derrick Henry is on that list.
We have a lot
too that are available.
But we have a lot of guys that contracts are coming up, and I appreciated the way that they handled their business. With some of those contracts coming up, I talked to everybody. Has a different situation. I think everybody handled it as professionally as they could. And you know, John and I will continue to work and do what's best for the team.
You got an idea of what you need. I mean, AFC Championship, fine, but of course that's not the goal.
No.
The goal is to finish it, to win the Super Bowl. I mean, do you have an idea of we need this, we need that, because there are a couple pieces that we needed to be in this game.
Well, winning is the goal. Winning a championship is the goal. The expectations are going to continue to be high. I do know that we have to start hosting some of these games. To go to Houston, to go to New England, right. To go to Baltimore, to go to Kansas City.
That's true.
We played well, but that's tough. And we got to start hosting some of these games. As far as our needs, you know, we need good football players. We need guys that understand that we put the team first. You know, Jack Conklin's a right tackle that has improved over his course of his 4 years here. You go right on down the list, Logan Ryan. All these guys that played with a contract that was coming up, that played their heart and soul out for us to get us to the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
Mike, I got to ask you one thing, though. As a guy who made his bread and butter on defense, I mean, when you look at Derrick Henry run, you have any idea how to stop him?
They always ask me that. If I had the answers, then I wouldn't tell him. I wouldn't tell anybody as long as he's on our team. I think I said play good defense. And look out for the stiff arm.
Yeah, look out for the stiff arm is right. Obviously, you're familiar with the Chiefs, having played them several times. What's your take on the way this game shapes up?
Well, I think that the speed, I think the Kansas City Chiefs have great team speed. They're athletic. You know, you look at Travis Kelce, and basically the way I explained him to our players is when it's zone coverage, he gets open. He sits down in seams. And when it's man, he just runs whatever route he needs to run to get open. Tyreek Hill not only is fast, but has great route craft. When your third and fourth option is Hardman and Sammy Watkins, those are tough things to handle. So I know that Kyle has done a fantastic job. They got great defense. They got the defense that can probably get it done with their front. And so I'm excited. I think the best two teams are in the championship.
And as when we were on defenses together, the quarterback to go up against was Peyton Manning, and we had to coordinate our rush, and we had to get reroutes at the line of scrimmage, and guys had to win. So with Patrick Mahomes, though, if you have that perfect down, he has the ability to scramble out and do something like that. That play that he had against you guys, is that something you'll see for a while? And
it hurts.
Why hit that guy? What happened on that play?
On that play?
It's like, let him have it.
He, you know, we doubled two players, and you know, we spied him, and unfortunately, we didn't make the play, and that's what happens. And you know, give him some credit, but I felt like we had a decent call there. We forced him out of the pocket, and we just weren't able to get him down. And Patrick did a great job.
I just want to go one more really quick because I talked
See,
about.
See, I knew you were going to have all the answers.
Yeah,
about
that.
It didn't take them all.
No,
I talked about our defenses with you know, going up against Peyton.
Teddy
also
never missed a tackle.
I didn't. One of the guys that helped me make all them tackles was Richard Seymour.
Yep.
So he's up
Who's also here, by the way.
As a Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist. And, of course, he's got my vote and your vote. But just some of your memories about what kind of player he was as he goes up in that room and his
candidacy
debate. The
mixture of size, speed, and athleticism. And I also thought he was a very instinctive player. He knew defenses. He knew what was coming. You know, it got me a lot of sacks. You know, we ran that Reed game over there on the right side, and I got a lot more sacks than what I probably should have gotten because of Richard. Fantastic person, fantastic player, and still a friend and supports me in my role now today.
He was just the one for me, Wendy, that he was ready to fight anybody. I mean,
yep.
The aggression and everything. He was the one telling the offensive line, I'll meet you at the bus after the game, because that's how intense he was and that's how personal he took
and
everything.
Teddy and I were usually the ones behind
him. Richard and I went to high school together. He's been like that since he was a little fella, so I can attest to that as well. Listen, Mike Vrabel, the only person to never yell at me in a locker room. So, no, that's not true, and you know
I
it. That's
never
not, that
yelled
is
at
not
you
true.
A bit. I never yelled at you.
You yelled, but that's okay. I probably deserved it. Any planking going on? Lately?
No. Out here in this heat, this counts as a workout.
Right. I don't know if you know, but
this
Mike,
is like 7-minute abs sitting here in the sun.
Well, we appreciate it. It was a lot of fun to watch your success this year, and we're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Good stuff with Mike Vrabel on NFL Live. It's always a good perspective when you get a coach. Number one, he knows he's talking to a national audience. And number two, he has a former teammate asking him a lot of questions, Teddy Bruschi. And so I think maybe there's a little extra effort, and it's an easy personal relationship, and so maybe he's more comfortable talking. So some good tidbits out of that interview. We wanted to play it for you from down in Miami. That is Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. Stay tuned. We'll come back with our final segment of the show next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the show here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. So, Darren, some good stuff from Mike Vrabel down in Miami. Meanwhile, you are gearing back up for another night of hockey on the east side, the east coast, if you will. New Jersey is the spot. 5:30 pregame here on 102.5 The Game. The game is going to be televised on NBC Sports Network for a second straight night. Only three games in the league. So, you know, when we have been for weeks talking about the games in hand, this is one stretch where they are going to, by the end of it, have played almost the same amount of games with a lot of the teams that they've played sometimes three to five less than just a few days ago because they're on the bye week. So the standings will look a lot different if they can win this game. Adam Vingan spelled it out perfectly for me. Because I was thinking the same way. It's a great win that they got last night. It wasn't the cleanest game they played, but you're not going to go into Washington and dominate Washington. They found a way to win, despite having some wacky things happen. You know, they had an own goal. They had a misplayed puck behind the net to hand Washington two goals. How many teams hand Washington two goals and still win at Washington? But it won't mean as much if they can't come back tonight with a strong effort and get a win at New Jersey. And it is not a given. If they play sloppily, anybody is good enough to beat them. So this has been an issue for them. They've lost to Anaheim a couple of times. They lost to Detroit earlier in the season, right? The good teams take care of it. They're consistent every night. So can they come back tonight with a strong effort? That's a huge, huge question, because you're going to have that sour feeling again, what the heck happened? And you'll lose every positive feeling you had after last night's win. So this is such a critical game.
We're about to find out, right? What team shows up? I mean, look, what you just said, they got to win. You got to beat New Jersey. You just do. And I know it's the NHL, and as we've already talked about, you laid it out. They just lost to Anaheim at home, and it was not pretty. It was not a good look. But you got to keep it going. You got to keep the momentum going. You got to find a way to win tonight. And then, you know, if they do, then you know what we'll be talking about tomorrow on the show? Hey, they got to win at home, right? The theme just switches to home.
Right. There's a lot of things they're trying to fix.
Right.
And so, I mean, they're going to have to change the pattern, or else the same things will get talked about. You're getting tired of having, hey, your best players have to be your best players? Well, have a game where Ryan Johansson has a strong third period and is a big force in why they won the game. Mikhail Granlund played a really good game last night. You want to shake the tag of consistency, then come back with a strong effort tonight against a team that's not nearly as talented as the one you beat last night. And then the home game thing is, there's no question, that's going to be a big theme, a big challenge thrown out to them on Saturday. But really, first things first, right? This is New Jersey. I'd have to look at how things have changed since they made the coaching change. Remember, one thing was they had disastrous goaltending, which probably cost John Hines his job. They're 7-9-7 at home. So sometimes there are teams that have struggled that still are way better at home. This is not one of them. But case in point, Anaheim is a poor road team. They came in and never trailed against Nashville in the game that they recently played here. So, what are you going to see tonight? Will you see Colton Sissons tonight?
Colton Sissons get in the lineup tonight?
It's a possibility. Would you take Colin Blackwell out? I'm not sure. Yakov Trenin was a healthy scratch the other day. He's sitting there. I don't know that the top three lines would be messed with. right? Unless somebody got dinged up that we're not aware of last night. Because that's always something, when a team doesn't skate and they played the night before, sometimes you are not aware of something that will be unveiled on you when the team takes the ice for warm-ups tonight. So you never know. The good thing is they have options there, especially if Sissons is ready to come back. Now, he has not been activated, right? He would have to be activated off of the mm-hmm. thing. That would be your first clue.
Well, the fact he's on the trip is what makes tonight intriguing. That's why it's getting brought
up. He's available.
He's on the trip. There's a real shot that you're thinking, okay, does he play? As we wrap this up, Willie, it continues to be really good to be in the SEC. Did you see this? Greg Sankey and the conference just put out that they brought in $650 million in revenue this year, and they're getting ready to distribute amongst 14 teams. Everybody's going to get $44.6 million, $44.6 per school in the SEC. Not bad.
I'd say not bad.
That's for a year.
Not bad at
for
all.
For 1 year. Not bad. We'll see how tonight plays out. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Darren, rest the voice. Jared and the GM coming up around the corner. Darren will be back on at 5:30 when our pregame coverage starts. Predators at Devils. Pete Weber and Hal Gill on the call. So that'll do it for us. Our thanks to Elijah behind the glass and all of our guests today, Adam Vingan, Brandon Wright. Who else we have? Elliot Friedman.
Calvin Smith.
Boy, we had a great discussion today. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.